Good morning, everybody. It is September 10th, 2019. It's 10 a.m., and I'm calling the meeting of the Story County Board of Supervisors to order. And we invite anybody who wants to join us as we say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And before I ask for a motion to adopt the agenda, I want to just make an announcement about a couple of the agenda items and how we're proceeding with them. We do have later on the agenda an open session and a closed session. For discussion of applicants for the Director of External Operations and County Services. We will not be voting today on making an offer to a final applicant. We are simply going to be discussing applicants today. Just want to clarify because some information has gotten out to the contrary or there's some confusion. We are simply discussing the applicants today, one in open session, and then two who requested closed session will be in closed session. And then we will have a meeting, a special meeting of the board tomorrow at 3:30 to discuss offering the position to a selected applicant. Just wanted to make sure everybody understood that at the beginning of the meeting. So given that clarification, are there any other questions from board members about the agenda? I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I move to approve adoption of the agenda.
I second.
As discussed.
Any further discussion? If not, Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
We've adopted the agenda. Next, we have public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. So if anybody is a member of the public who's here wants to address an agenda item, you can move to the microphone. Seeing nobody move to the microphone, I will close public comment period number one, and we'll go on to agency reports, of which we don't seem to have any. So then we'll move on to consideration of minutes. We have the August 27th and the September 3rd minutes.
So move as presented.
I'll second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve the minutes of August 27th and September 3rd. Olson?
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Minutes adopted. Next, we'll go to personnel actions. We have action forms listed. I would entertain a motion for approval of the personnel actions as listed.
I move to approve the personnel actions as listed.
Second.
Second. Discussion? Done. Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Okay, personnel actions. Now we move on to the consent agenda. We have several things there. Is there anything that anybody wants to pull for discussion?
No.
Then I would entertain a motion that we approve the consent agenda.
I would so move that we approve as presented.
I second.
Okay, discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Consent agenda. We are moving along, and I haven't skipped anything yet. Has anybody noticed?
Yeah. Heads up.
Just checking. Okay, now we're down to item 9, public hearing items, again, of which we have none. So then, to item 10. Background, additional items. Background regarding Historical Society funding from Story County, Lisa Markley.
Good morning, Lisa. There's been discussion over the years as to the funding of the historical societies and how that happens and what the rules are. I wanted to give you guys a little background, a little information just for your thoughts and future ideas. The code basically says that it comes from the general fund, and it says that it should be the expenses relating to this can be paid from the general fund for the use of nonprofit historical society organized under Chapter 504 or a city-owned historical project or both, okay? And the one quote-unquote code requirement is that the board may, the board can, relating to finances, require a local historical society to submit its proposed budget, including the amount of available funds, and estimated expenditures as a prerequisite to receiving funds. A local historical society receiving funds shall present the board an annual report describing in detail the use of the funds. The way Story County has done this for as long as I've been around, which we're not going to talk about how long that's been, there's a one amount, and it's equally distributed between the historical societies in the county. So the board at budget time says we're going to put this amount in this line item, and then it'll get equally distributed. I gave a little history there from FY14 to FY20 and what the increase has been every year into that line item for the distribution. I also gave you a list of what I show on the Historical Alliance as of June of 19 of who the historical societies are. I did have a brief conversation. Understand that Howard Hammond was a very diligent historical society member, leader. When he was alive, he would call me every year and want to talk to me about how much the board was willing to give and how much. Since his passing, I don't think anybody's stepped up and actually taken the helm as much as Howard did. I think they're kind of just trying to maintain. So anyway, in my conversation with the Historical Alliance, I don't really think I got an answer as to how you become a member of the Historical Alliance, because I don't think they know for sure. But they are presenting to you guys in October, just for your information. In FY20, we did budget for 11 historical societies, which would include Collins, and that would give them $3,800 each, if that's the option we go with. Now, I think the discussion was Collins will become a member of the Alliance before this year, which obviously they have a resolution to do so. So that's how we had a conversation at that point in time as to how we were going to incorporate Collins into this. Any questions?
The total that we have already allocated for FY20 for all of them was what?
$42,000. Which was a 20% increase from 19, fully anticipating that another one would become a member.
Okay.
And we didn't want it, if at all possible, I think the board didn't want to do an even amount or the same amount again at 35, because as you can tell, we did 35 for 2 years in a row. So I think that the board wanted to increase it so they had the capacity. We had the capacity to do that.
And just for clarification on your page, Lisa, so Kelly, they have a historical hall, but we don't provide funds to them?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
We could. It's a couple that's pretty much managing that historical hall, and they've not asked, they attend the historical society meetings, but they've indicated repeatedly, verbally, that there's no use for funds. There's no new purchases planned. There's nothing like that. So,
thank you.
So I guess I take it over now. Okay, and I'd like to kind of take it over where Lisa left off about fiscal year 20, noting 11 historical societies. As research was being done on this, and Lisa did a great job of pulling out what has happened and giving you the background here about why we're kind of in this state of flux or confusion now. Also is that Collins actually joined and anticipated receiving funds in fiscal year 19. But that didn't happen. And as I then made some phone calls and was talking to some people about inquiries about this also, it came up that it turns out Zeering, who had been presented as a new one forming, actually has been formed for several years. There's been a few people involved in Zeering Historical Society, but they have not been passed on via Mr. Hammond to Lisa. So she didn't know that they at least were anticipating receiving funds. And when I spoke with the person who is kind of heading in Zeering, she said that because she had requested funds via the Historical Society, meaning she gave information to the Historical Society in the past, that since that wasn't passed on and the check was never allocated, she thought they didn't qualify for them. But she's never been told that, okay? So one of the issues that we will have with fiscal year 20 is that if you add another historical society in here, we obviously won't be at the 38,000, the 3,800 for each historical society, because we'll be taking the 42,000 and dividing it by 12.
We'd be back to 35.
Correct, right. So, but that's not on today's agenda as a separate proposal necessarily to fund. What is on today's agenda, first of all, is that Collins was anticipating receiving $3,500 in fiscal year 19. And they had submitted that to the Historical Society, had, I believe, said that in a meeting, and it didn't get passed all the way through the system like we should have had it passed through. So there's a proposal that out of fiscal year 20, additional funds, not out of the 42,000 already budgeted, but as a separate, there would be an adjustment, an amendment, 3,500 go to Collins for that money that they anticipated receiving. Even though we've closed out fiscal year 19, it would in essence be a payment in compensation for what they didn't receive in 19, but it would be a separate additional payment that would come out in fiscal year 20. Then the other thing that's on proposal here is that we go to the societies, at least a couple of us. We will get an invitation, we always do, to meet with, and perhaps that would be something Lisa would like to attend that year also, to listen firsthand.
Awesome, because I never hear anything from. I had no idea Collins was included in this. I don't know what the meeting was last year as far as what the decision was coming out of there.
So for us to go, and one of the things to talk to them about was to ask each historical society to go back to its city body and get a resolution similar to what Collins is going to provide to us. And that resolution that Collins has, you have a draft of in there, and actually that was what is being or was presented to the Collins Council, was after discussions that I had with the Collins Historical Society representative and the city clerk in Collins. And as in the background material says, we faced a similar kind of miscommunication back in 2017 related to the Story County Economic Development Group. And the proposal, after I found out that there were a couple of cities not aware that their economic development money was going to an actual economic development group, the way to solve it was is just each city passed a resolution acknowledging such. Lisa had proper documentation. This is the same thing here. We'll have documentation about who the official group is. And then if the Historical Society wants to put requirements on who receives money or project or whatever, okay.
The Historical Alliance.
I'm sorry, the Alliance.
Okay.
The Story County Alliance. Well, then that's their job and that's their, you know, that working with them. But at least we could set up a foundation. And that would I don't mean foundation as in a capital F, I mean set up a baseline, okay, about kind of here's our procedure about what we want to do. So you're scowling, Lisa. Have I not done a good job of explaining?
I have always been of the impression that whatever the Historical Alliance brings forward as the members of their group is who we fund.
Okay.
So that's where I was at with it. So that was a new.
Got it.
New thought
I think
process
you and I are actually on the same wavelength, and I've not done a good enough job of stating that.
So was Collins not a member of it?
Yes, they have.
19?
I have no idea.
They were. That's they were showing up at the meetings in 19.
Yeah, so, I don't know what the historical alliance requires as far as, you know, do they require attendance at meetings to be a member? Do they require a
resolution?
Right. What do they require to become a member of the alliance?
Gotcha, and that's where you're saying you haven't gotten that information yet.
That was why, you know, I'm basing everything I researched on what's on the website for the Historical Alliance and who their members are, and Collins is not listed, so I don't know.
So they're not on their historic. Collins is not listed on the Historical Alliance website.
As of June of 19, no. That's the last time that website was updated.
Okay, that's just a few months ago.
That's what I, when I pulled it, that's what I found was right. June of 19. And when I asked Messer, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Wayne Messer about it. I don't know that I really got a clear answer as to
and I found his name. They're working on their blog or working on their website,
right,
but I don't know that he's taken over what Howard Hammond used to do.
Right.
There's no doubt that Howard Hammond for years and years gave, you know, great leadership to this group. Here's what I'm thinking. Do you have more questions?
I'm just wondering kind of the membership, the process there.
Yeah, and I'm thinking the Historical Alliance is coming to, actually, I think I went to the spring meeting, the one in Kelly, and they asked if they could meet here in this room. And I think Nevada is hosting, and they're going to be meeting here. I would like a little more information from them about their membership and how they determine that, and maybe we've worked through them. It's been positive. I hate to see all these places that have already worked through this process we have now have to go back to cities and get resolutions.
Well, I attended last fall's one.
Okay.
And at that point, what was asked was that would the county please tell them what membership consisted of? And that's when I came back and talked to Deb Shildroth. And I believe Deb had a beginning conversation with you, Lisa.
Yeah.
So I think it's great we go and we ask what your rules are, but they asked last year for us what the rules were. So there really is your description of them being uncertain about what they are. So maybe we're asking them, I mean, as far as who their members are, certainly they should set it. I think there's a separate issue about making sure that each one of the cities understand who it is that's receiving their funding for a historical society. And that's what the point of these resolutions would be, the same as in the resolutions for the economic development group. Like I said, Discovered Ames didn't know where their money was going first time around. So that's separate, but what they want to set up, then we do, if I understand Lisa's description here, then we could tell them we want to see a budget. What they turn in now every year, and then I just gave them to the Director of External Operations for some kind of filing, and maybe did she pass them on to you? Okay. So is that they each do a report that they give at the October meeting. But it doesn't necessarily, some say what their budget is, some don't talk about what their budget was. Instead, they just talk about what their results were, where they focused on. So there's no uniformity at all has been in this. But they have given something back. So that's why I'm proposing the resolutions, whatever the Historical Society wants to do on its own membership or whatever. But Collins is of the understanding that they are members, and Zeering has come in the past, too, since I've gone to them, and they certainly have been welcomed as, if you will, a member.
Lisa, one more question. When do you usually send out the money?
April.
April. So we have so we don't need to make a decision today in terms of how much money. I mean, you're not waiting to cut the checks until we decide what to do here. Okay.
This is the annual, the time I annually pay some of these lump sums, and this is one of them. The Economic Development, the Historical Societies, the Okay. There's some that just don't get paid until spring after we have the last of the taxes come in. Yeah.
The Collins one, I am suggesting, and we'll be making a motion for today, because that's a retro that they're waiting for. They have plans for the money.
Well, we never got a request from them, though.
Well, that's back to, I got a phone call when the money didn't come in. Okay? I mean, that's what prompted this whole next round. Two years ago, it was Colo who got missed. So when you say never got a request, well, Lisa, did you get a request? Howard died a year ago, right?
Right.
And so how did you pay out this year? For fiscal year, the spring of this 19. Year. Fiscal year, how'd you pay out?
I've never been involved in the board's October meeting with the historical societies. So I don't know what that conversation entails. I don't know what how that transfers into what I should be putting, what I should be submitting for approval for payment.
Right. So
I didn't change anything because I never got notified that there was any additional people.
Right. So the but Collins thought the notification had come to the county through a list from the Historical Society. So when you say Collins didn't make a formal request, they did. I got a phone call, and they said, where's our money?
When did you get a phone call?
Oh, what, 3-4 weeks ago? I mean, when I came and talked to you, right away.
Was when you came over to me.
Okay. Right. So at that point, this is, if you will, it's their request. This is how it is operated. Unfortunately, it's not been well defined. And it's the same way it happened with Collins 2 years ago. I got a call from Collins after the fact. And I'm getting the calls because
I said you got the call from Collins 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, she meant Colo, I think.
Colo, I meant Colo, sorry. Colo, the exact same thing happened a couple years ago. And once again, we handled it similarly, except not coming back to the board. And I got the call because I've been the one who, since I've joined the board, has been the one that has attended the meetings. Not always have the other two supervisors attended the meetings. There's no bill. That's why. So this is the formal request, and certainly the resolution I asked for was so that everybody was on the same page.
From
Collins.
So we're on discussion. So we're under items 10. Lisa presented discussion item 1, which was the background. So now
correct.
We're on discussion item 2.
Correct.
Okay. So we've just moved on to that. Just so that I want to. Because we kind of intertwine the two. I just want to make sure where they are, and I get that.
In a more normal situation, or when, you know, this would have been Lisa and Deb, okay, or the Director of External Operations coordinating on this, but since that position was vacated while she was working on it with Lisa, otherwise I would have referred the Collins request over to Deb, since Deb already had information, and she's the one who actually I've come back and given the Historical Society information to. So we're trying to fix it for a community here. That's with a motion that I will now make, if you're ready for a motion on just the Collins part of it for to receive the $3,500. I move that we allocate as an unbudgeted item, but out of fiscal year 20 general funds, $3,500 to the Collins Historical Society as a one-time special payment to bring them in line with anticipated funding from fiscal year 19.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm,
just for
sure.
Clarification, because I'm just a little confused on all of this. So,
sure. Welcome to our world.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I went up to the Historical Alliance website still, and they're not on there. And
yeah,
it's, but I do see in the attachment is the Collins resolution and stuff. So I do see that. But for fiscal year 20, and I know we're talking about 19, but fiscal year 20. We'd still have to discuss at a later time Collins because they're not listed on this sheet here. Or is Collins included in that down here? That's what I'm confused at.
Okay, so I understand what you're saying. I listed on the top, Collins is not in that list because I am taking that completely off of the website as to who is a member of the Alliance.
So I guess my question is the funding for fiscal year 20, where it says budgeted for 11, does that include Collins?
That includes the assumption that Collins was going to become a member of the Alliance.
Okay.
Yes.
That's
how I understood what we were doing in 20 when we put that in the line item was our assumption was Collins was going to become a member of the Alliance.
Okay.
So Collins would receive another payment in spring of 20 because that would be as they're now being formally recognized in all places.
And we don't know where the where it got dropped off with them in joining.
Actually, it's we don't know where Zering got dropped off, who's not even mentioned here. I mean, on that, I understand. Collins did recently form 2 years ago. So Collins did not long-term have a historical society. This has been the efforts in the last couple years of some Collins residents. Zering, however, it turns out, has had one for a while and has not shown up. So we're going to have to deal with Zering, but today I've not asked you to deal with Zering. I've asked you just to deal with Collins, to the makeup for Collins, and then let's go to the Historical Society in October and make sure that Lisa is attending also. I think that's vital, and that we all get on the same page.
Well, why didn't you get what was the call from Colo 3 to 4 weeks ago? Tell me that again.
No, Collins, 4 weeks ago, 3 to 4 weeks ago.
Then it was Collins, it's Colo, now it's Collins. There's a motion on the floor. We've had some clarifying discussions.
Motion on the floor with no second, but you started discussion.
I'm sorry.
I allowed clarifying discussion, okay. But I think it's probably time that if we're going to go further, we should get a second.
Sorry, I will second.
Okay. And is there further discussion? I will say that I have a problem going back and looking at fiscal 19 and saying there was a mistake made in fiscal 19. The only documentation we have of it is that we've had a verbal call that somebody told us there was a mistake and something should have happened. So I'll just say I'm going to vote no on this because I think that we can go forward with 20, but I'm not for going back into prior years and trying to make changes in what was budgeted. And that's nothing against any of the parties. I just don't think that's a good process. So I just wanted to say something so people understood what my vote was going to be.
And my response to that is this is how it was handled 2 years ago for COLO because of exactly the same scenarios and situation. And I think that Collins will be very concerned that COLO got been special treatment, whereas the real goal here is to move forward and get this all taken care of.
And I wasn't here then. So is there any further discussion?
Okay. No, I would just say I understand the concerns. I do think in some fairness, I think there, I know we go off the Historical Alliance website. Hopefully we can garner more information in October because I'd like some sort of better process to know what is their change so that we get that information early enough and we're not going back continually to do the fixes. If someone was told that they were going to receive money and didn't and they've made purchases and now they're kind of caught there, that is a concern to me. So I'll approve for this time. I understand Zering's a whole separate issue. But I think we really need to get this under control in October.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. Yep. Let's get our process cleaned up, regardless of what we vote today. Any further discussion?
None.
Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Edens?
Aye.
Merkin? No. Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Now we're on discussion of stop sign placement and traffic control options for intersection of West 190th and Grant Avenue. And we have Laura Solson and Darren Moon listed as presenters.
Okay. I'll give background about why I approached Darren about this and then turn it over to Darren. I was approached by a member of the public who lives near the intersection of 190th and Grant, Hyde, I guess further up it's Grattan. We've gone through this before. What is okay? And was wondering when in the world the county was going to do something about that horrendous situation there. You see, Supervisor Heddens is nodding.
Deal with it every day.
Okay. All right. And and I explained to this person that we actually had tried to deal with it 2 years ago. But our engineer had serious concerns about we made it worse instead of better. And I said, but I would be happy to bring it before the new board. It's 2 years later, and I said I will approach the county engineer. At that point, I'm going to turn it over to Darren and let him.
Okay. I'll do two things here, give you the history on what's happened, and secondly, just recent discovery might change what the county's options are here. I'll start with that. This was just a recent discovery of yesterday. I was looking, the city of Ames put some new aerial photos up. It actually shows the new building that's in this quadrant. But while I was looking at this, the red line here is the annexation line, the city limits. I had missed that in the past, how far north of the intersection the city annexed, and that's due to a curve that was put in this road. When this road was paved about 20 years ago, they could not get right-of-way purchase from this property owner, so they actually bent the road around the house. But by doing that, the section line stayed here, but the center line of the road moved down 28 feet, which is considerable distance. I had no idea it was that far looking at the road. You don't really notice it. So the city annexed about 15 feet north of the edge of the pavement. And so if a stop sign was put in this location right here, the stop sign would actually be in the city limits of Ames. So I would consider a stop condition a decision that had to be made by the city. They already own the south half for sure, and then this one, in my opinion, the stop would be in the city as well. If a roundabout was put in here, the county would have to be involved because it would get out into the county portion, so we'd be involved in those discussions. So just keep that in mind, and we can talk about that later at the end. But let me go back to the history of what's happened here. We paved this 2 years ago. And right about the time we were completing the project, we decided to try the four-way stop. At that time, it wasn't so much of a traffic issue. It was the bike path crossing here was the concern. The bike path comes down this side, stops, crosses on the north side, and then it's supposed to cross here in the future. You can kind of see the city's graded for the bike path. They thought that would be going in fairly soon after we got the project done. It's turned out that has not happened. And so the crossing is kind of, it's not as important because it just hasn't connected. So the traffic, the bike traffic is just using the existing road traffic signals at this point, or signs. So, like I said, when we originally passed a resolution to put a four-way stop, or a two-way stop, to a four-way stop, that was mainly due to the bike crossing concern. I put that in before this north stub was actually open to traffic because I had concerns that this east-west traffic on 190th had been traveling this for so long, for so many years, they wouldn't even see the stop signs we put up. So I wanted to do it while this leg was still closed, so we didn't have a lot of crossing traffic in case that did happen. So we passed a resolution through the board to put up the four-way stop, installed the stop signs, worked with the city of Ames. They were responsible for the stop sign on the south side. In addition to our normal stop aheads, we had an additional road work ahead sign out in advance of that, and we put flashing lights on top of the stop signs to draw some even additional attention to the new stops. We probably had them up, I think, 2 hours. And I think 50% of the traffic blew right through the stop signs. I was shocked at how much it was. So it finally made the decision. Yeah, we had some calls to the office within those 2 hours. You guys got to do something immediately, get these down. And but I was out there watching it the whole time and saw it, made the decision we need to get it. And even I was at this when I decided to make the call and go back to the shop. I was heading northbound. I turned left here. Somebody blew right through the stop sign, about rear-ended me, and about went in the ditch. That kind of confirmed my decision to take those stop signs down. So the city came out immediately, took theirs down. We took ours down. The board passed a resolution after that to take those stops out until something more could be decided. Now, like I said, that was more based around the bike path crossing at the time, and the city's plans kind of fell through for that, so it kind of just went away for a while. Traffic started to pick up when the school went back into session. First, this is the photo of what it looked like back then. With the bike path crossing, one of the issues, we couldn't really lower the speed through here because you can see how wide open it is. If we lowered that to 40 or something, it would just feel like you were crawling and traffic just wouldn't go that slow. So we couldn't justify a lower speed. Now stuff's starting to build up, the development here and then the retirement home on the corner. It's starting to really build out. So traffic might, once things build out, traffic sees that and they kind of tend to slow down a little bit. So I wanted to point that out, and you can kind of see the curve in the road there that I'm talking about. The section line goes straight through, and you can see that curve. So we did a traffic count internally. This would be about a year ago while school was in session. This would be 190th traffic going this direction, then Grant. You can see there's a lot of through traffic, 84 that went through, and this is just in 1 hour in the morning, 7:15 a.m. to 8:15 to catch the school traffic. And then there was a lot of turning traffic. I think that's 92 that are turning. And then the other majority of traffic, they're just waiting to get across the road. So they got a lot of turning traffic, a lot of through traffic. So this traffic here gets backed up to wait for that to happen. But soon after, this is from 8:15 to 9:15, it really drops off and really stays that way throughout the rest of the day. The afternoon traffic isn't nearly as bad as the morning traffic. But it builds up a little bit in the afternoon. So based on our traffic study, it did not meet the warrants for a stop sign at that point based on the traffic considerations. So we did add these cross-traffic do not stop below the stop signs to add emphasis that east-west traffic is not stopping, and the city added one to theirs on the south side. Just a little more background on accidents since we paved. 2018, we did have four accidents out there. I think two of them were in that morning time frame and the other two in the afternoon. It looks like a bump, but this doesn't go back. I think in 08 we had three, even when it was a gravel road connection. So it was somewhat of a busy intersection. So accidents do happen at intersections like that. That's a bit of a concern, but this also includes 19. We have not had any accidents that I'm aware of that were reported yet in 2019, so that's a good sign. So it has dropped off. And the warrants for looking at a four-way stop, you need a minimum of five accidents in a calendar year to meet the warrant for a four-way stop condition. Where we get those warrants is our Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, MUTCD. That's the book. And this is what, if you ever get sued due to signage issues, that's what will come up and be used in the court of law. It's adopted by the DOT and pretty much nationally. This is a section out of that MUTCD for a four-way stop condition. You need to meet these three. B is this is where I talked about five or more crashes reported in a 12-month period. And then C is based on the traffic counts that I showed you. If the traffic exceeds a 40-mile-an-hour speed limit, which it does bump 70% of the values provided in one or two, and we took that as an account as well, and it still didn't meet the warrants for stops. So beyond our internal traffic study, the City of Ames did one as well. They hired a consultant to do one a little bit more in depth. Similar conclusions. This is the intersection at Hyde and 190th. Ours is Grant, of course. Again, the 7 to 8 time frame in the morning is the high traffic count. They did meet warrants in those particular periods, but overall, warrants for the four-way stops were not recommended. It does state at the bottom the city could also consider an all-way stop at this intersection. It's not warranted, but they kind of gave them the option. If you really wanted to, you could. A third check they did was based on a level of service. So they based the existing condition here in 2020 to the 2040 condition with just stop signs. And based on that AM turning traffic, it was a level service of F. It's A through F. F is the worst. So that's the worst grade it could get for that AM condition. Later on, level C, level of D is acceptable. So level of C is very acceptable for an intersection like this. If a roundabout was put in, they checked that for 2040 conditions, and both of them met level of service A. So in the notes, they noted, even though it did not meet the warrants for a four-way stop, they said something should be done by 2040, roundabouts recommended by 2040 anyway, to just meet the level of service condition. That's all the slides I have. Questions on how we got here and what the next step would be.
I just have a comment. We know that that's looking at current traffic, current volume. We know there's more development going on in that area now.
Yeah.
And we know one of the scenarios the city's Ames has in its 2040 plan is more development up north. And I've read the traffic study that Darren's referring to that Ames did, and it's not just that intersection. It's the 190th and Carver, and it's the Cameron School Road and Carver intersections that are also of concern. Now, I know we recently lowered the speed limit on Cameron, which was a good thing, and you know, but there were higher numbers of accidents there, and a lot of them were animal related because of the river, or Squaw Creek. So there's various issues coming up. Nonetheless, I drive all those intersections from the other way, from where Supervisor Heddens does, and I know what happens in that 7 to 8 a.m., and I know what happens in that afternoon time. So I'm just going to say this. Because a lot of it is school-related, and it's because of where the Gilbert School District is there a way to do something that just deals with those times, like yellow flashers or something like that? And I know costs more than a sign. But would that be warranted?
Back when we were trying to address just the bike path crossing with the city 2 years ago, that's the only solution they could come up with. They could create, because we couldn't lower the speed limit, they thought they could make a school zone just in that area and put the flashers and have a temporary speed limit just at certain times.
So does that, where that red line is, that annexation line, and the fact that whole road is now basically within the city of Ames. Is that how I'm reading that?
Yes.
So, and where the stop sign would even be placed could be in the, or Warren could be in,
yeah,
the city of Ames.
It would be.
So is it time for us to approach Ames and ask Ames to do something with that intersection?
Yes, we can do that again. I've done that many times, and I asked for their input last week again before this meeting, and I haven't gotten any again. I don't think it... Based on that traffic study and everything, I don't think they feel like it met any warrants at this point, but I can go back to them again.
Well, I would say that morning traffic is way backed up, especially
if you're heading
north up to 190th. It is way back.
And people get frustrated and just zip in front of you if you're coming from that way.
Right. What I've seen in the mornings is folks turning on Audubon, which then connects with, it's in the new development, so it's where that building is right there, but it's just a little south of that.
We're
turning on Audubon and going through the housing subdivision to skirt through there because...
Well, that's something good to pass on to the city.
It is so backed up. And like I said, I drive there every day and see that. And then Supervisor Merkin's correct. With a lot of development going up, you've got that whole corner location right there that is going to be housing numerous individuals that will be coming out, although they'll probably come out, they'll either come out right onto Hyde or right where they've got that opening there onto 190th, just to the east of the corner there. My concern is that that's going to add into potential hazardous situations with that in itself.
There is a website of Thames 2040 Comprehensive Plan, and it asks for input on all the possible developments they've identified all around. I've already put something up about some of the traffic concerns that I've been working on, so I would encourage people if they
add that to that.
Go add a comment.
I think that the three of us giving direction and empowering Darren to send a formal letter and copying in the city council itself, or maybe to the council itself, that who then can formally pass it on to their planning and traffic department, would be appropriate, noting that we're getting comments. It's of news to me since 2 years ago when we took that board took the action to vote it, that we really don't have any control over it. It turns out both sides of the road, north-south, are both under the control of Ames. And so I think also passing that on. So that would be a good statement, I think, that we could make, empowering Darren to send the information, noting that supervisors are receiving comments, they're observing it firsthand. You know, with this new information, certainly I will go back to who I was contacted by and let them know who she needs to call at the city. But the situational anecdotal information is ahead of where I guess the empirical is. We don't want to see the empirical, that means more crashes, right?
So, yeah, if a four-way did go up there, we'd have to come up with some new ideas on how to inform people of that. Rumble strips are really not an option. It's getting too developed, and I had calls that, yeah, pretty much threatened me if we put rumble strips out there. That wasn't going to happen. I understand that. So we'd have to, like I said, it's probably more of a city issue now than we thought before, but we'd have to do a lot more to warn traffic. I think we probably prevented some more serious accidents by taking them down.
And but honestly, warning flashers was not a four-way stop. Flashers probably aren't going to keep people from going, diverting through there, but it at least can help slow some of the traffic down.
Right. I'd like to let you know also that after initially giving Darren the heads up that this seemed like something that we should look at again, I did call Sheriff Fitzgerald and asked him about if we had put in stop signs, what kind of assistance could the deputies provide in those early days of enforcement. I described Darren's previous experience of the two hours and saying, whoa, you know, this is not good. And Sheriff Fitzgerald did say that he envisioned that when the deputies assigned in that area were not on another call, them being able to maybe help and give out some warnings and have a presence there, which always catches people's attention, but that most likely would not be able to assign a dedicated officer at certain times to sit there. But it was helpful for him. Now, obviously, I made that call once again thinking we had control of the north side of the road.
And just so you're aware, there is another group, the multidisciplinary safety team. We meet in Ames once a month, and that includes law enforcement and city and county engineers. We talk about traffic issues, and this was discussed back 2 years ago, and there wasn't any real good ideas how we could. That was more based on the bike traffic crossing, how that could be safely done. There wasn't a lot of good ideas at that time, but that's another committee we can take it to, but a letter to the council could be an option as well.
So is that sufficient direction? Do you know what we'd like you to do?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Darren.